Hello listeners and Happy New Year. My name is Emma Burnell. I'm a political journalist and I'm here with Steve Fielding, who is a professor of political history.
Yes, you say that as almost as if I'm not.
No, it's just I never remember your title, Steve.
No, right, that's
and welcome fine. To the Zeitgeist Tapes. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And this is a very special, very different edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes because we are the Zeitgeist Tapes on tour. As you may be able to tell, we are sat outside a pub.
Well, yes, the Bread and Roses Theatre,
which is a great name.
Yes, yeah. In London's Clapham.
Well, I've dragged Steve all the way to that London.
Yeah, down the Northern Line, the horrors of the Northern Line.
But we are here to see a play called A Modest Little Man, which is about Clement Attlee. And so before we go in, I'm going to ask Steve, who is, as we have established, a professor of political history.
Yes.
Tell us about Clement Attlee. Who was he, and why is the play called what it's called?
Well, for the benefit of our listener, Clement Attlee was the leader of the first majority Labour government of 1945, the transformative Labour government of 1945, which won a landslide just after the ending of the Second World War. Or you can tell we're live. That led that government to create the NHS, the welfare state, committed policy towards full employment, to change Britain in significant ways. Not in ways that maybe some of our present Labour leaders would think was sufficient, but nonetheless, at the time, it was seen to be a revolution, and did amazing things that weren't said to be possible before. Before the Second World War, at least. So, the play. Well, we're going to find out what the play is about. It's the play's title, A Modest Little Man. I think refers to the quote about Clement Attlee, which it might have been from Churchill, but I'm not quite sure. I'm sure we'll find out in the play. He referred to Attlee as a modest little man with a lot to be modest about.
And then got battered by him.
And then got totally battered by him in 1945, yes, in the general election. And because the point about Clement Attlee was he was unassuming. If our listener can Google, and hopefully they can, they could Google a picture of him and you will see what he looks like. Sort of bald-headed, moustache. His background is very posh, very proper. An officer in the First World War, a man very kind of probity, of few words, but he led the most successful government ever, I would suggest. Certainly one of the most transformative, and in a direction that many people today would certainly welcome.
Excellent. So we're going to come back now after the play and let you know what we thought of it. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Emma.
What do you do when you really like something?
You know what I do, Emma? I talk to all my friends about it. What do you do?
That's a great idea, Steve. I even tell strangers on iTunes how much I rate and review it.
What a great idea.
Great. Well, we've just come out of the play, so we have learned a lot more. Well, I've learned a lot more about the Attlee government and how it all went and how it went down. Steve, was it historically accurate?
Well, thank you for that, Emma. I've just finished the crisp.
I was babbling through
because we're in a beer garden in the Bread and Roses
in January, just for you listeners.
Yes. So I thought it was good. I don't go to the theatre very often. In fact, I was just thinking, when was the last time I went? And I think it was to see the Chuckle Brothers in Panto in Nottingham. And that obviously was a great experience. And it really was, listener. But, so I don't normally go. And it was a very intimate theatre, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very fringe.
Very fringe. We were sitting two rows from the front. And there was a little bit of, you know, actors coming on stage behind the audience, so it was a very intimate venue. So it'd be the kind of thing that would, if you don't like the theatre, you might get a little bit embarrassed or a bit self-conscious about. But there was none of that. I thought it was right from the start very engrossing. Mm. What it did was it started with Churchill's infamous Nazi radio broadcast. That's when Churchill compared, during the election campaign of 1945, when Churchill compared the possibly incoming Labour government to the Nazis, which, given that Britain had just stopped fighting the Nazis, and just as the horrors of Belsen and the various other atrocities were coming to light, was a pretty incendiary thing to say, and to set up really the character of Clement Attlee, because essentially the kind of leader that he was, because it was a play about leadership in many ways. Churchill did that intemperate speech, and the play has Herbert Morrison, who is kind of like presented as the quintessential politician.
He's a spin doctor, isn't he?
Spin doctor.
And you know, if, for listeners who don't know, Herbert Morrison is Peter Mandelson's grandfather, and that was clearly signalled, I felt.
I was waiting for the signal, but I didn't see it.
Oh, did you not? I thought the whole spin, right, and spin and spiff was very Mandelson.
Right, but there was no direct reference to Mandelson.
There was no. So there wasn't a direct reference. It was hinted. It was subtle. Yeah.
I think probably most members of that audience would have got it, because if you're going to see a play about Clement Attlee,
you might probably know who Herbert Morrison's grandson is.
Yes, you probably do. So, but the whole thing was set up with Morrison saying, "Oh, you've got to fight back on that, Clem." You've basically. Churchill went to the gutter, and Morrison was advising Attlee to get into that gutter too. Mm. And Attlee did not. Yeah. He very calmly, as he did in reality, he calmly basically compared Winston Churchill, the war leader, and what a great man that was, and just said that it was a different Churchill that had been revealed the previous night in that broadcast, and left it like that, and then went on to talk about other things, policy. Mm. So I thought, right from the start, it kind of set up a really, really good play.
Mm. And I thought, the kind of the writing in the rock that sort of ran through it was the sort of a combination of Attlee's almost inability to express himself in any real way, but equally his core, rock hard core of decency.
Mm.
And it was the kind of those twin pillars of who he was, and there was nothing, he was very spare. Character, there was no fripperies, except occasionally you get a hint of them with the wife.
Yeah, she was the narrator, wasn't she? Yeah. Mrs. Attlee was essentially the narrator for it, and I thought Francis Beckett, I think maybe consciously got women into the play, because obviously historically that was not a very
other than Jenny Lee, where you can see that there was a political reason for her to be in.
Yes, and there was a character called Rose.
Rose, who I think was probably a kind of amalgam of lots of things that happened in Attlee's life to bring them all together as one person.
Yeah, because it kind of brought it. Like I say, it started with Churchill in 1945, but it kind of took us back. To, a little bit about him being active in the East End from, his public school kind of outreach.
And how he established that politics was the way that he wanted to make a difference in the world.
Yes, that charity was not enough. And in fact, that charity sometimes, because it was quite a telling little bit where the vicar in Stepney, where he was doing his charity work, basically he was exulting in the fact of charity and how it made him into a good person.
Yeah, yeah.
And that the poor were necessary so that he could feel good about himself. So that was quite telling.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I thought it was really, really interesting. And, I mean, it ended with basically the establishment of the welfare state.
Yes.
Which is the crowning glory of, I would say, not just Attlee's government, but really any British government.
Yes, I mean, when historians are asked in polls about who was the greatest prime minister, maybe of the 20th century, Attlee is either one or two.
Yeah.
I won't say who he usually vies with, but the anti-Attlee.
The one
that undid or tried to undo most of what Attlee tried to do.
Yeah.
So it was a very interesting play. I mean, if you didn't know anything about Attlee, you would. I mean, Francis Beckett has written a biography of Attlee, so it did actually dramatise most of the incidents that a historian would associate with Attlee. And I thought, I mean, the guy that played Attlee, first of all, you've got to get a bald guy.
Yeah, he did look the part.
But he must have thought, this is great, I'm a starring role, but I've got the least lines, because Attlee just didn't really say very much. But we did learn, and I knew, but I'd forgotten that he was a poet.
Mm.
And we heard some of his poetry, which frankly wasn't very good, but
it was
sweet.
Doggerel, but it was sweet. Doggerel,
And it revealed a side of him that you wouldn't necessarily.
A playful side.
Yeah. That you wouldn't have known anything about. But he remained an enigma, I think, and I think he was an enigma to most people who'd have known him other than his wife and immediate family.
If you think about how often Churchill is dramatised, and that's partly because he was the war prime minister, there's obviously that, so obviously making war films and making films about that period. But Churchill was your kind of, I mean, there's a reason Boris Johnson models himself on him. He's that celebrity politician.
Mm.
And Attlee was just, that seemed anathema to him, and he wasn't interested. And in those days, you didn't have to do it the way that you sort of have to do it now.
Yes.
He had a sense of a public image he had to do, and the public image fights that he wasn't willing to have so that he could have much more interesting fights. There were some interesting sort of parallels with modern times. So the whole dinner jacket fight. Now, I'm not a political historian, Steve, so I don't know how big a deal that was at the time.
Yes, because it showed that after some vituperative cabinet meeting, and one of the things that it does bring out is that Labour cabinet was full of big personalities, good or bad.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the passion of Bevan, and there was the wiliness and the clever trickiness of Morrison. There was pomposity of Dalton, and that basically Attlee had to manage all of these prima donnas, and he did it in a very perfunctory, very succinct, and kind of he spooked them out, really, didn't he? By the very fact he hardly said anything. But he kept it all together, and I think that was something, saying something about leadership in regard to that. But there was a scene in which Bevan sort of loses it a bit, and then Attlee wants to have a little chat, and Bevan seems to think he's going to get sacked or something. And it is basically, he's bringing him up on the fact that he didn't wear a dinner jacket at the Guildhall,
Mansion House.
And because that's something that also is brought out, that Attlee wants to do things in the proper way. I mean, that means in the way that's established.
Yeah.
But he wants to do radical things in a conservative way. And that's kind of an interesting paradox.
Yeah. No, I mean, what it made me think about was Michael Foote and the donkey jacket and the treatment of the way, and the way that Corbyn has smartened himself up. I mean, if you look at early Corbyn and current Corbyn, the difference in the cut of his suits is extraordinary.
Mm.
And, you know, that again is, you know, have the fights that are important rather than stupid fights over what jacket you wear to the cenotaph.
Which Attlee does make that point, but in about two words.
Yes, exactly. I'm no Attlee. Yes, but that's probably a good thing for podcasting.
Well, indeed, yes. Coming Attlee would be a disaster on podcasting, wouldn't it? It would be very quick.
Yeah.
And maybe our listener would quite like a very quick one. And frankly, listener, we're freezing in this beer garden. So
we're not going to stay on much longer.
Yes, we're not going to stay on much longer. So if it's maybe we should do it in the freezing cold more often. But anyway. So he remains this enigma. I saw a very brief interview that Francis Beckett gave, and he said that when he started writing it, he did think that he was thinking of comparisons with Jeremy Corbyn.
Mm. That was clear, but now
he wasn't so sure that Corbyn really lived up to it. And people have made comparisons with Attlee and Corbyn. And, I mean, you can see why superficially that might be the case, because, I mean, there are lots of references to him not saying very much and being a terrible public speaker.
Mm.
And I'm talking about Clement Attlee here, not Jeremy Corbyn. And of course, superficially, there is that. But beyond that, I don't know that there are any comparisons.
I mean, I think it's a difficult comparison to make if we see Corbyn in government.
Yes.
Because, you know, what people were saying about Attlee before he was the transformative Prime Minister could equally be applied to a lot of what's said about Corbyn now.
Yes.
And if he just KBOs, as Churchill would have said, and gets through a radical transformative programme, then he will. The comparisons will be fair.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. We're on. Yes, because the play does make a lot of the fact that Herbert Morrison, like the conventional spin doctory politician, which he really did do, try to get Attlee to stand down.
Yeah.
Just after Labour wins,
huge
majority, because you're just a little mouse. I mean, various people, there are lots of derogatory comments about him. You know, you're a little mouse, you know, the, you know, you're a little, you're a modest little man who's got a lot to be modest about, and yet he was the leader that basically engineered, or was at least prime minister. Because that's the thing, you know, could it have happened without Attlee? The play suggested maybe not, but I don't know that you can definitively say it one way or the other. But he gave a different kind of leadership. And like I say, there is this paradox that he's very, very conservative guy from a very privileged upper middle class background who really cherished the forms of the social order, and yet totally, well, not totally, but very substantially transformed it from a socialist perspective.
I mean, I think what's an interesting choice is to centre a drama around someone who is so circumspect and then write it in quite a pacey way. You know, yes. There was no point that I was... There was a point I was like... It's a, what I hadn't known before I walked in, which I never know when I go to review theatre, is whether something's in one or two parts. And so quite a long way towards the end, I was thinking, oh, it must be the interval soon, and then it ended. So I was like, yes. This is really well-timed.
Yeah, I literally don't know how long it took, but it wasn't.
At no point was I thinking, oh, what's going on my phone or
yes.
any of those things.
No, absolutely not. And there's lots of funnies in it. It's yeah. a very funny play.
Yeah.
And I think most of it is based on actual record yeah. as well.
I mean, I think they played around with some of the language.
Yes.
So some of the really famous quotes that we know of, like stuffing their mouths with gold when it came yeah. to the way that they dealt with the doctors.
Yeah.
I don't think that actually happened in that conversation, did it?
But
it was said by that person.
But Bevan yeah. did say that he'd stuffed yeah. the doctor's mouths with gold.
So I think yes. what they you know, as a you know, perfectly acceptable theatrical device, they took some words that we know that Bevan said and put them in a different circumstance.
Yes.
And it, so in some ways it was like the greatest hits of the Attlee government.
Yeah. And I think also even, you know, there were no... Like we were saying about the Morrison thing, there was no direct comparison with the present, except towards the very end when there's a reference to Attlee being in retirement and wanting to make sure that his wife, who was considerably younger than him, was able to have the money, sufficient
oh,
money.
And the whole audience was
clear
saying
dig
that's at Tony Blair.
Very, very big dig, because how unseemly it would be if he went around grubbing for money.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
But that was the only one reference. Everything else was there implicit.
Everything,
the audience
yeah, exactly.
could make up their own minds about it.
Absolutely.
So I think, as a historian, a political historian, knows a little bit about that period, I think, first of all, if you don't know anything about it, it's a really funny...
It's a great primer.
Really funny introduction.
Yeah,
yes. And if you do know about it, it's very funny anyway.
No, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I as a piece of artwork, as well as you know, I will be reviewing it separately as a piece of theatre.
Mm.
It's interesting to look at it from both perspectives. I thought it was really, really enjoyable. We won't have a clip. I'm afraid, because it's live theatre and you can't record it for all sorts of technical reasons.
Yes.
Maybe I will play out. Is there a particular, I mean, given everything we've just said about how circumspect he is there an Attlee speech that we should play out on, Steve?
I don't think he gave any memorable speeches.
That was
rhetorical.
Wondering that.
Yes, I don't know that he did. That defines him. I mean, that's why, you know, we've got all these flipping Churchill dramas. Because he was good with words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was a facile... In many ways, he was a facile, pantomime politician.
Reminds me of no one I can think of right now.
And yet, when you think... Well, apart from, allegedly saving Britain in 1940, or contributing to it, most definitely, what did he really do positively?
Yeah.
And then you got this little man, Clement Attlee, whose words... I mean, can we... Is there any quote we can associate with him? No. What did... What government did he lead? What did it achieve? Quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, in which case, what I'm going to do is play out on the lovely song Bread and Roses, which is also the name of the theatre where the play is currently showing. So I'm going to say thank you to Steve.
Yes.
If you're still alive and your lips haven't turned blue.
Well, I'm going into thaw, so thank you very much.
And also thank you to... thank you to Lord Wood of Anfield for our theme tune. And this has been a very cold political human production.
As we come marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand million. sense that a sudden sun discloses for the people here are singing bread and roses, bread and roses.
As we go marching, marching, we bow.